Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartell.
For Brighton Mazda and the end of financial year extended clearance. See brightonmazda.com.au.
Great to have the Triple Premiership player, Brownlow medalist Norm Smith, medalist all-round handsome man. By goodness, he's handsome. Jim, good morning.
Morning. Don't feel so handsome. Feel a little bit dusty as you do when you sit up and you watch too much cricket of an evening.
You've been watching the cricket as well.
Yeah, I love the cricket, as you guys know, and I think for everyone, we're hoping for a resurgent West Indies, and we might have it. We might have a group of West Indies players that can be better than the worst-ranked Test nation in the world, like they've been for the last probably 5 years. But they're exciting to watch.
Yes, my word, they are. Well, they must have been. I must admit, I didn't spend too much time late in the early hours of the days in the last 4 or 5 days watching it, but I watched a bit of the early sessions. And it's, as I was saying before to Whitey, Jim, it's just good to have the West Indies back with a presence in the world of Test cricket.
Well, what they've got, Jimmy, is some fight. Yeah, a bit of fight about them, a bit of character about them, which they haven't had a lot of in the past, decade or so.
Yeah, and they've got their captain's world class. He's the best all-rounder in the game, and that Test match was, I think, the all-rounders back. I think every country's been looking for, premier all-rounders. We've been looking for one since Andrew Flintoff ripped us apart in that Ashes series. Don't bring it up. Jason Holder and Ben Stokes, that was a good battle within a battle.
It was, absolutely. And a great performance by the West Indies across the weekend. What about the other great performances in the world of footy off the weekend, Jim? What caught your eye?
Well, it's funny, when you have Thursday night footy, you have to go in the Wayback Machine, don't you? It seems
you do.
So long ago. But Geelong's, I guess, one quarter, I think it had a lot of people leaning back in their chair going, whoa, I think the Cats are going to be a top four side again. When we had the layoff of the 80-odd days, I was one that thought, well, and not with my Cats pyjamas on, I thought it would be one that would absolutely benefit the Cats immensely, because they brought a lot of players who were into round one underdone. But where sides who would benefit are the sides who are well-drilled, well-organised and used to playing with each other. And that's the Cats. You look across their side and their squad, it's a pretty stable squad.
Yep.
But that quarter, they played one quarter of footy and absolutely blew away the Lions.
So, can you get Whitey's take on this? Whitey, we have been critical of the way the Cats play sometimes with their methodology and the system they seem to play. That third quarter on Thursday night, Jim, in the Wayback Machine, was nothing short of scintillating. It was pulsating. It was captivating. It was all those excellent words. And it was quite unlike anything we've seen from the Cats all year long. Why did we see it in the third quarter?
Well, that's why I get frustrated with Geelong, is you see that and you wonder why they don't do it more often. Now, I know they can't do it for four quarters. I know they can't do it for 100 minutes, because you just can't play at that sort of level of intensity or speed. But I don't think they do it enough. And, we saw it in the last quarter against Carlton, which didn't ultimately end in a win. But they played some breathtaking footy in that quarter. We saw what they did against Brisbane, and I just don't understand why they don't do it more often.
Ramo, what's your take on the Cats? Because they're clearly a very, very capable team.
So, Chris Scott's got a 70% coaching record, so winning percentage.
Yep.
So that's unbelievable. That's over, what is it, a 10-year period now. So I think they're well aware of situations within the game. So that second quarter, when Brisbane were dominating, they're still able to limit the damage through that period of the game. Now, other lesser teams, they get blown away. Brisbane are a very good team. Whitey probably doesn't agree with me totally there yet, but I think Brisbane are a very good team, a very good attacking team. But Geelong were able to weather that storm for long enough, keep the game close enough, and then in their attacking brilliance, they're able to take the game away from Brisbane, take the game away from teams. They did it the week before against Gold Coast. So I find it frustrating myself, because you go, well, can you attack for four quarters in the game? And they'll be the highest scoring team in the competition. But I think because of potentially the age demographic of their team, they can't. Now, my fear for Geelong is when they're playing slow, that doesn't work for them in a final. And it's been proven over the last couple of years, Jim. When they've gone slow in finals, they can't get themselves out of that rut. When they've gone fast in finals. The first quarter, the first half against Richmond in the prelim, they look terrific. So my question is, when they are going slow, does it need to be a quarter time break, a half time break to get them going? Or can they flick the switch within the quarter to get themselves going?
Oh, good question, Rama. It's hard for sides, especially with the lack of continuity with training, to be able to switch it within quarters. And we find that it's really hard for any side to switch sort of modes or attacking methods or even defensive methods, because players are just so robotic these days. It's like, stand there and they'll stand there and they'll do it to the best way you can. But then tell them to stand there, but if you see this, go stand there. It's very hard for a lot of players to do that. I know it sounds very simplistic, but they're so well drilled that they just get stuck in whatever their instructions are. To your point of that, finals and quarters, I think that's why the Cats do play throughout the season, or have been recently playing so slow to start a game, is because when they've gotten to big finals recently, I know you highlighted the Richmond one is a bit different, but they've been blown out in first quarters. And you think about, their big finals losses, they've been down by 5, 6, 7 goals even at quarter time. I feel like it's almost like they're trying to take the first quarter away. And we've spoken about this a lot, guys, haven't we, that a lot of coaches are taking the game deeper or taking time off the clock. And I feel like what Geelong do a bit with that experienced side is, well, if we just take the first quarter away and we're even, a goal up or a goal down, well, then we can play the game better over three quarters than the opposition, or over a half better than the opposition.
Surely that's not... But to Rama's point of it, in finals, that's not what's going to win you a final or go deep into a final series if you played that method, Jim.
No, I think they've tried to identify why they've been beaten in final series, and they're trying to find ways to combat that. Like, so when an opposition comes blasting out of the gates, as Rama touched on, that second quarter, I think they've started to find a way of, well, how do we limit the damage instead of having 6 or 7 kicked on us?
Yeah. Well, I get
Whitey,
that point.
And Whitey, that's the sign of a good team, Whitey. Mm. When a team that you're playing against has the momentum and they're attacking and they're not scoring on you still, your defence is still holding up. So Brisbane dominated that second quarter, as you know, Whitey, but Geelong's defensive midfield was able still to withhold that.
Yeah, if Brisbane had kicked straight, we might have been talking about the game for a different way as well.
Maybe, yeah.
Does the ground come... I know we always look for excuses for Geelong of why not, and I think they're a genuine equal premiership favourite, but the ground, everyone says, well, down at GMHBA Stadium, they can do it because they can squeeze it. SCG's not exactly bigger ground. It's a fatty, but it's not as long. It's a fatty. It's not as long as Kinnear Park, but again, it's a small ground. Do you think that played a factor, Rama?
I think that ground suited Geelong much more than it suited Brisbane, obviously, on Thursday night. And yeah, I do think that's a bit of a factor, because Geelong, they do know how to squeeze a ground really well. But in saying that, they also know how to keep two defenders sitting back in their defensive 50. Mm. So Charlie Cameron never got out the back once on Thursday night, which is a big factor. Blitzars was that last defender a lot, and he had the speed to go with Cameron. So Cameron tried a couple of times, but Blitzars was there. Then there was Colajasny was there. Tui was there at times. So Geelong set up better than any team in the competition defensively. They're brilliant. They keep their back six together often, and they defend together often, which I love.
All right, I want to throw another one at you, the three of you, about Hawthorn. Mm-hmm. They were terrible. They were terrible on Friday night.
That's been generous.
How do you describe Hawthorn? Because they are a team that has proven over the last 12 months that they can beat anybody, because they have. They've beaten all the good teams. But then they can serve up absolute rubbish where they just can't score. Well, they just can't score. Hmm. So there's a massive difference between their best and their worst. Why is that the case, Jimmy? And others.
I'll go first before the "and others". I feel like the Hawks, because, again, well coached by the master coach, Alistair Clarkson. Even if you talk about the last couple of years, Whitey, is scoring has been an issue for Hawthorn. Even the last 3 years, they've been top 4 defensive, but bottom 4 for scoring. Look, even last year, Gold Coast only just went a little bit worse than Hawthorn in scoring. Now, the reason I highlight that is Hawthorn are a side that's set up not to lose. So what they all do is they won't beat themselves. So if you're good enough and you can win clearances and stoppages and you can use the ball, you'll beat Hawthorn. But Hawthorn aren't going to go and open the game up and beat themselves. So when you see they've gotten beaten in recent times, sides have smashed them around the stoppages, smashed them around contested footy, won the territory game and absolutely hammered them, just put them under pressure. Whereas Hawthorn, if you play dour football, you kick it long and slow, they'll intercept it and they'll just knock the footy around and they'll beat you in those games where it's 70 points plays 60 points, or even 60 plays 50. Does that like sort of make sense? Like they set up, they don't go out to. It sounds weird. It's not like they're going out not to win, but they don't set up the game to win. They set up the game not to lose.
Yeah, well, a bit like John Longmire.
Well, yeah, a lot like John Longmire. I reckon it's a good reference point. They seemingly don't want to move the ball forward with any great intensity, Rammer, from what I've seen. They were slow, sideways. No. They had 100 marks again on the weekend, short kicks, and not really advancing up the ground. Like, just for reference point, Collingwood had 59 marks on the weekend. Hawthorn had 100. They had 7 marks inside forward 50. Collingwood had 6. But if you put speed on the ball against Hawthorn, seemingly, they are in all sorts of trouble. The Magpies did that beautifully. They played a bit of a... In the last couple of years, the reference point's always been Richmond with that forward handball and breaking the game up through forward handball. And they just caught Hawthorn on their heels all night long. And if you go through, I reckon, the defensive lineup from the Hawks, they're big and cumbersome and not necessarily always slow. Like, Frost is a big unit, but he's quite speedy. But Frawley, McAvoy, Frost, even Stratton to a degree, they're big-ish players. Even Sicily plays tall. He doesn't play small anymore. Yep. They play big, those guys in the mix. I think is a little bit off at the moment. And the first lever pulled, Rammer, when things aren't going well for the Hawks at the moment, is McAvoy forward.
McAvoy.
So it's seemingly...
He's been a great defender.
Yeah, well, he's been okay. This year he's found a bit more challenging than last year, but there hasn't been as much pressure around the ball because the teams are exiting, as Jim says, exiting stoppages, exiting congestion really quite easily compared to previous years, and that puts more pressure on your defenders because the ball's coming in a bit cleaner. So there's no chance to actually defend it.
And you're spot on, Huff. They're always on the back foot. But I'm a big believer in particularly your half-back line. Hawthorn haven't got... They're missing Jarman Impey. Obviously, Jarman Impey come back and play his first game in the reserves on the weekend. So I'm a big believer your half-back flankers need to be metres gain players. They need to be taking the ball forward at speed on rebound. Because what's happening is Hawthorn are winning the ball back enough in their defensive 50, but then everything's slow. It's sideways. It's those 100 marks that you're talking about, Half. It's maintaining possession and trying to almost play chess to get up the other end of the ground without any damage. So they're trying to limit the turnover damage to get the ball up the other end of the ground. So I think, what did they have? They had 318 disposals on the weekend for only 32 inside 50s.
For 3 goals.
So that's the worrying part. They haven't got players to go, okay, I'll get 15 or 20 possessions a game and go forward with 500 metres gained from a half-back flank. So Hardwick's not going to do that, and Sicily's not going to do that. And they're your two runners. And Sicily's not a runner, and Hardwick's not a runner. They're stay-at-home defenders. So they try to bring Will Day into the team, who played his first game and is their first-round draft pick. He's a player that likes to take the ball forward. But they need speed. They need speed off a halfback flank. I'd take Isaac Smith back there. He's playing on a wing at the moment, getting plenty of the ball, but take him back to a halfback flank where he can then run through a line and kick over a line.
To show how dramatic it is with Hawthorn, this is what I used the word before about horrible football, they were 2-2 at three-quarter time. And not that was pretty good for footy, but even the week before, they kicked 2 points in the first quarter against the Giants and 1 point in the last quarter against the Giants. And it gets worse, because if you go back to that game against Geelong, which seems a long time ago now, they were terrible again. They kicked 1 goal, 1 after half time. So this is a major issue for a team that many thought could finish in the top 8, maybe even the top 4, based on how they finished last year.
Yeah, I think it just highlights all the points we've made, though. They're set up, well-drilled. Defensively, they'll be well-organised. But that means that they're not going to take the game forward, and they're going to knock the footy around, and they're not going to try. They're not going to beat themselves. And the way they've sort of identified that, and way sides often do beat themselves, is by opening up the game. You know, running and gunning, and you know, trying to create space in the forward line because the field gets bigger. They'll just condense the field. If they'll win it back, their defenders one on one have been brave and done a good job. But then they're going to go safe. But if you look at their midfield numbers, They're bottom, second last, third last in all the key statistical areas. So the opposition gets their hand on it and plays with speed as Half and Rammer touched on. They're just waiting to get scored on.
So the last one on Hawthorn for the three of you. Is it fanciful to think that Hawthorn can have a say in what happens in the final series? Even though they have been able to beat all those teams, but is it fanciful to think that they're a genuine contender?
Well, they've only beaten the Tigers this year, really, haven't they? I mean, that first game against Brisbane, I'm prepared to, the whole first round, I'm prepared to forget. So outside of that, they've beaten Richmond, who haven't been in scintillating form. They just snuck over the Kangas, which has worked out to be not fantastic form. The form letter, I need to get back up again. Giants smacked them, and the Pies smacked them. Now, the Pies are a serious footy team. We shouldn't underestimate that, and we should give them some credit for the way they
played. Yeah, I agree.
And their pressure off ball is as good, if not the best, in the competition, I reckon. They're brilliant the way they do that. But I'm a long way from convinced, and I can't wait to see what happens this Sunday against Melbourne.
Oh, now, I agree with you.
I can't wait to see how they play, because at the moment, the way they're moving the ball and the way they're defending is, and being smacked at the contest and the sources Jimmy was talking about, I reckon the D's will get a hold of them the way things are travelling.
There's an enormous pressure on Jager O'Meara in that midfield. If he's not playing well, Hawthorn's not playing well. The correlation between him doing well and Hawthorn, it's amazing. Talk about barometers.
I thought you were going to pick another player, which is the Chad, because
But where do you play the Chad? They need two.
The Chads. Forward. Yeah. Like almost the Jai Simpkin role from the Kangaroos. He's the forward who comes to the forward half of the stoppage. He's the creativity, but any chance. Stuck in the ball, heading towards forward 50, inside 50. He's got the best retention rate, kicking inside forward 50.
Yeah.
Any time the Chads had over 15 and kicked goals, that's when Hawthorn's won.
Yeah, he wasn't thrown into the middle too much Friday night. There wasn't a lot of variation in the structure of what the Hawthorn looked like in that game against the Magpies, who were fantastic, just by the way.
Yes.
The other part for Hawthorn is they've got Warple, who's not going that well at the moment, is the best and fairest winner, because they have to bring back Mitchell into a midfield. Then they've got O'Meara, obviously, in there as well. And then they've got Liam Shields in there as well. So they've got those four guys. So how does Chad get himself into that rotation of getting the minutes that he needs in a midfield with those four players? Like Warple, he looked completely lost on Friday night. He didn't look like he had a position on the field.
Yeah, he's certainly not going anywhere near as well as he was at last season. I think the loss of Luke Brewster is quite underestimated by a lot of people as well. The impact he has in that forward line. Their entries are no good
shocking
at the Hawks. They've got to work that out. 25 past 7, we'll get to a break, come back and talk more about what happened in round 6. Rammer wants to talk about the teaching of defence versus attack the impact it's having on the game as we see it currently in 2020. Jimmy Bartel is our Monday analyst. Great to have him part of the team, and he'll be back after this on the break.
Just reinforce that we've got a real ticker. We've got a lot of players who just never give up, and we've showed that pretty much all season, but it just reinforced today. Our backs were against the wall at quarter time, and we just never gave up.
Justin Longmuir there, 29 past 7 on a Monday morning. He is the coach of Fremantle. He's gone back-to-back winner in the last couple of weeks. A fantastic performance. And boys, could you believe what you were seeing on Saturday afternoon at Metricon Stadium, where at quarter time it was the Saints by 36 points. They got out to 37 points as a lead in that game. And for all money, it looked like 100 points smacking coming the way of Fremantle. Could you believe what you saw midway through that second term when the wheel did start to turn for Fremantle?
Well, I just want to jump in. This game, Ronnie.
Yeah, Jimmy, I just want to jump in quickly and say before Jimmy tells us exactly how it all changed, Fremantle have done this a lot this year. They have one absolute horrendous quarter. It's not necessarily the first, but they've done that the entire year where they just it all just breaks down, but then they regather and go again, Jimmy.
Yeah, and I think that's because that's a sign of a side that's got a lot of young players in it. You have fluctuations form, not week to week, but even within quarter to quarter, Whitey. And a lot of their young players, if you haven't watched much of Freo and you're from over here obviously in Victoria, you wouldn't recognise a lot of them. But they've got some serious young talent on their list. So I think in a year, 18 months, Freo should be making the big surge up the ladder. But I did that game this weekend, and my first concern at quarter time was when you have that much dominance in the first quarter, players tend to mentally, for some reason, just drift away from what you did so well that got you that big lead. You think, oh, well, I can just start peeling off a bit earlier for a handball. I can just get a little bit further forward of the footy because it's good times. I can fill my boots here. And all you need is the opposition to start just, you know, going in a little bit harder, just winning the contested footy, you know, win a few more one-on-ones. And it's very hard to get that momentum back. And I thought that from Freo, it was led by big Sean Darcy, who was having the game of his life until he got absolutely crunched by Ben Long. He was fantastic, Sean Darcy, in the first half. And Nat Fyfe, when he was in the centre bounce before he played the second half forward. Those two guys just absolutely got Freo going. And St Kilda, I think it's part of them going from a poor to an average side to a good side. I don't think, as Rama touched on with the Cats, they're not at that stage where they can go, well, hang on, we're not getting out of our own way. How do we halt this siege? I just think that's part of the learning curve for the Saints.
So, Jimmy and Rama, is the challenge now for St Kilda, having played this really offensive footy, positive footy, move the footy quickly, and it clearly worked for them in the first quarter, but then they lose, to hold their nerve and keep doing that, or do they need to get a better balance between attack and defence?
Nah, I think they need to continue to attack. I love their attack. You know, at times it's not going to work as it did it on the weekend, but I think it's going to work more often than not, Whitey. And this goes into the point that I want to talk about a little bit later about the teaching of defence and the teaching of attack. I love what Brett Ratten and St Kilda are doing at the moment. They're going to have times where it doesn't go well or it doesn't work and there is a bit of a defensive breakdown. But if you're scoring within a game of football, you still give yourself every chance, obviously, to win the game. When you're ultra defensive, I think your chances of winning are so limited.
Yeah, and I think, Rama, a bit further to your point, that St Kilda actually defend better when they've got the attacking mindset. I know that this has become almost the reverse footy lingo that we're hearing. Geelong brought out, you know, defending with the ball. Now, this is a bit like one of those terms. Is I think St Kilda defend better when they're attacking because You see their defenders, Carl and all these sort of guys, get really proactive, which means they're attacking, but they're also getting really good territory, a really good positioning with the way they set up defensively. When they park the bus and they go defensive, they all sit back and goal keep, and the opposition just keeps coming at them anyway. And they're not at a mature enough side to go, win it back, now let's all go restructure up or set up and move the ball down the ground a bit more methodically. I think they're a side that's got to keep that flow on the game because their defenders actually defend better when they've got that mindset where they're proactive in their defence. But I just think, Whitey, they lost their discipline and, I guess, their hunt around the contest, which then Freo just picked through them. Sonny Walters was big in the second half. Brayshaw is a gun. He's just becoming a better and better player through the middle of the ground. And then the likes of Bewley. just starting to get lots of run on the wing. So Bewley's replaced Langdon on the wing. He's just taken his role, but a left footer. And their young defenders actually stood up. Duman, he didn't lose a one-on-one after quarter time.
They've got a big group of young players that are going to be their core for the next 10 years. I reckon Fremantle is an exciting team for the future.
So, Whitey, just one more point on St Kilda. Where it broke down was uncontested possession for Fremantle. So that is then an effort point. That's an effort point in defence for St Kilda. How can you run to your man to close down space quicker so he doesn't get an uncontested mark or an uncontested possession? So there's nothing wrong with their attack going the other way with the ball, but when it's time to defend and close down space on your direct opponent, rather than standing there guarding grass like a lot of players do these days because they've got an out, or I was in the defensive structure, get close to your man, close down his space so you limit the uncontested football and uncontested marks for the opposition.
Well, they the pressure rating, just the, on the Fox Footy pressure ranking, I don't know, Champion Data pressure rankings, I don't know how they come up with the number, but in the first quarter, St Kilda were just hovering below elite, above average, and really high above average. Second quarter, when it all started to go pear-shaped, they were back down to poor. They dropped down to poor. So it was a really noticeable shift in intensity around the contest, and that off-ball stuff that we talk about a lot, and the ability to close down opposition when they have the footing. They just stopped. They literally just stopped. But the other thing with St Kilda, they're in Noosa.
Right. That's cool.
No.
That's great. Hastings yes. Street.
Absolutely. No.
Betty's Burgers. The surf
Do you know how far it is? Do you know how long
it is by
bus to get from Noosa to the Gold Coast?
2:30.
It's about 3.
2 hours and two. Yeah.
It's about 3 hours in a bus. 3 hours in a bus.
They will stop for a week.
And then go back as well. I reckon it's a really horrible situation. And that's 3 hours at best if the Bruce Highway is not congested, which it often is up in Brisbane.
Am I allowed to go to the surf club still?
I don't care where you go. You still got to sit in the bus for 3 hours prior to the game and then 3 hours later pack.
So what would you prefer? The 4:30 get up from Port Adelaide yesterday to get on a plane to go to Queensland to play, or the 3 hour bus trip or the 2 hour 20 bus trip, whatever it was?
I'd be preferring to do the Port Adelaide flight than a bus. I must admit.
No. Isn't that what the Premier League players do all the time? They get on the coach and they sort of head around the UK playing their matches.
I don't know. By the way, don't get this wrong. I'm not making an excuse for St Kilda. I'm just saying that's not ideal.
Excuses.
That's a long way
got
from being ideal, sitting in a bus for 3 hours.
Listen to your coach's hat. Nah. You got your coach's hat on again.
I reckon that's a crap system.
I think you can find an excuse anywhere this year.
I'm not asking
factory, Harford.
Of all the outcomes that are out there at the moment, I don't think St Kilda are in the favoured zone. Let's do the bump while we're here, because you mentioned Ben Long and Sean Darcy, Jim. Mm. He's been sent straight to the tribunal, Ben, for a careless bump. That was severe impact and high contact, obviously, which is inarguable. Is that the right outcome?
Well, it's the outcome, and it gives Ben Long to argue his case, and it also... it puts the onus more on St Kilda than Michael Christian. So that's the advantage of Michael Christian elevating it to tribunal status, I guess. Well, off to the tribunal is you put the onus on St Kilda to make the case. You argue the medical reports, you argue what happens. And I guess that's a pretty fair way of doing it. Now, if you go back to when Sean Burgoyne slung Paddy Dangerfield in the tackle, and there was a little bit of outrage about, he should go. Remember sort of the directive change from Michael Christian to start elevating things. Now, I think if these incidents happened, or the Dangerfield incident with Burgoyne didn't happen, everything would come down, call it half a mark, which he'd be in the high and he'd probably be looking at 2 weeks.
Yep.
But I think everything, even Dylan Shields went up, call it half a mark, and Ben Long's went up half a mark. Because I feel like the way they're graded, or the way it sits, and being sitting in an MRP meeting or two years ago, is it's almost like there's half levels the way they're thinking. So on the higher end of medium or the lower end of high, does that make sense? So like say if high is I think there's been a rounding up of these sort of incidents, which then pushes them all up.
All about the system, guys. As soon as it's gone from they're being negligent and reckless and then putting into careless, it puts Crusoe in a really difficult position to be able to, I think, grade them appropriately, because you're either low or high. It's hard to get right on the button.
But that's careless. I don't think there's any grey about the careless. I mean, you're entitled to bump. You got it wrong, and you'll pay a price for that. But you're entitled to bump.
Absolutely. But my point is that under the old system, that would have been deemed as a reckless action, not a careless action. So it would have been much easier. I reckon it would have been 4 to... In the old system, would have been 4-3, and... Dylan Shear would have been 2-1.
Well, if the Dylan Shear one is rounded up, Jim, and you, yeah. and we're using the Dangerfield, the Burgoyne tackle, as the example, going from a fine to 2 weeks then, because Curtis Taylor plays on. Now, you read the paper this morning and there's he's going for an MRI to check a cheekbone, but from a fine to 2 weeks and the kid continued to play. Is that harsh?
A fine for 1 week, wouldn't it? But it would have been a week. Yeah. So it's gone from 1 week to 2 weeks. Yeah. So that's what I'm just saying. I think just the general, call it mood or feeling, is push him up a little bit.
Yeah. So Dylan Shield was careless high. I initially graded it as medium, but there might be a medical that makes it worse for high. So he's going to have to fight that. And I think if you're Essendon, you fight that. So it's careless high and high instead of careless medium and high. Careless medium high still gets him a week, Remo. So he's out anyway. It's just a matter of whether or not he misses one or two. Yep. Ben Long one.
Well, I think
because is there a depressed cheekbone for Sean Darcy as well? And he was concussed and didn't come back on. So not surprised to see that grading from Chris. So if they want to fight that and make it high impact and bring it back from 3+ to 2. They'll certainly get their chance as it's been sent straight to the tribunal. But we saw a few of them. Brad Ebert yesterday got.
He was lucky.
Who did he collect? Oh, the Perryman.
The Perryman. Got to pay the Perryman.
He was lucky because that looked
bad.
Poor. But the Perryman got straight back up and played on. So he'd probably get a fine, you'd reckon, from the MRA. But the bump is back, boys. It's back.
But you can't have a system where you've got Chrisso having to elevate just to get the outcome he needs. And again, this is not Chrisso's fault. This is the system's fault, because this is when fans get frustrated, because he's manipulating things to get the outcome he needs.
But is he?
I think he is in this situation.
So Sean Darcy has got a suspected depressed cheekbone, and he was concussed and didn't play on for the rest of the game. That's a severe impact, isn't it?
Personal view is that's high impact. Severe impact would have...
What's severe? He's dead.
Got the cart out. Get the trolley out.
If he took his head off completely.
it's open to discretion, isn't it? I would have thought Long was high impact and Shield was medium impact.
But they can fight
the outcome
that.
Well, they can fight it. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought the old system was better than the new one.
I'm with Whitey there, not the severe impact in that, but the fact that you're actually asking opinion or the person grading it being Michael Christian to rely more on his thought process. I want a cold and clean cut, you know, as I always touch on it, box ticking exercise. I think that's where we fall into trouble and where you provoke emotion from the general football fan is when they go, oh, but you gave it this one 2 weeks, or this one result in 2 weeks because you felt that should be elevated. Why didn't you elevate this
that's
one?
My
or why
point.
Didn't you judge
yeah.
this one
exactly.
harsher? I think that's where angst is created. If there's no emotion and no, boosting up things to get them to games, or, you know, downgrading them so they're not as severe, that's where I think you fall in trouble, where you go from right a page backwards. If you keep it cold, emotionless, and clean cut from left to right, well, then the result's the result, and then fix the table.
That is exactly my point.
Sure.
And you've made my point a lot better than I made it, maybe.
I must admit, I have no problem with the outcome of those two bumps this week.
I don't either, Huff, but I'm just picking up on Whitey's point that if you, even during a season, going, oh, there's been fan outrage that Burgoyne doesn't get a week for dumping Danger into the dirt, let's look them a bit tighter. Well, then again, you're using human intervention, where it should be the only human intervention is just plug it into a system and it spits out a result.
But if my skeptical mind comes into the conversation, why would the MROs and the judicial system be different to the laws of the game, which change on the back of a comment or one incident?
That's possibly just ruining the game at the moment, because now we have no idea what's going to happen when the whistle is blown.
I'll tell you who's not ruining the game, Port Adelaide. Let's move on. Fantastic yesterday against the Giants. Jim's Giants went down to the Power, and Kenny Hinkley, who became an AFL Life member, was up and about post-game, and it was a... I must admit, I was really pleased for not only Port Adelaide, but for footy, because I think they're a really good team to watch in the way they play. and it's important for them to be a successful team as far as I'm concerned in season 2020. And they rebounded from a really disappointing performance last week against Brisbane. Now, albeit that was a game at the Gabba, which is a home ground for the Brisbane Lions. So it was a little caveat there, a little asterisk next to that loss, albeit a disappointing one. But they rebounded really strongly. Rama, what did you see from Port Adelaide yesterday that made you smile?
Well, their attacking flair is what I continue to come back to. And now, okay, 9-9 doesn't look like a lot, but late in that game when it got tight, Port Adelaide didn't try to save the game. They tried to win the game, which I really like. They were taking the ball forward still. They were playing on from marks and giving Dixon, giving their key forwards a real chance inside forward 50. Zach Butters was terrific in that last quarter. He was involved in everything. GWS couldn't lay a hand on him. But the Giants are handball happy, just too much at the moment. So, you know, you've got 172 kicks and 155 handballs for the Giants. They need to kick the ball more. Give those forwards a chance like they did last week to score. But Port Adelaide, there was a little question mark in my head last week after the Brisbane game, the way they played.
Yep, me too.
But I think yesterday, that's gone now. I think they're a bona fide good team in this season now. They look solid across all lines.
The best part, Rama, about Port Adelaide's win was the game was starting to slip away in that third quarter. The Giants were starting to get on top in what was an arm wrestle. And Port Adelaide was able to absorb the pressure and then click into gear in that last quarter, and as you said, win the game. That's winning differently to how some of the other games they've won, where they've done it quite easily and it's been all beautiful football and whatever else. They actually rolled up their sleeves and won an arm wrestle, and I think that would give Port Adelaide and Ken Hinckley huge confidence.
And Jim, the issue for Leon and his coaching staff, I know that they'd be really disappointed. It was clearances yesterday.
Smacked!
41-25.
12-4 out of
probably
middle.
Well, it's your best midfield. Now, your ruckman, whether it's Mumford or Jacobs, that's debatable, obviously, at the moment. I think they need to bring Jacobs back into the team now. But 41-25, Jim, that's a belting around the ball.
Yeah, they've just been a little bit off with clearances this year. You mentioned it has been a strength of theirs for the last couple of years. You get Tim Taranto back in there. I know one player doesn't make a side, but that's his one wood. I think that he's big and he's big. He's a big boy. And I think they're just trying to find the mix right in there because of, obviously you add Tom Green in there, who's a very good clearance player. Cornelio back from injury. I'm not making excuses. I just think they're trying to find the... It's excuses. Half it is. Noosa, all that sort of stuff. I just think they're trying to find the balance. But I think you have to just tip your cap to Port Adelaide. I think all of you gentlemen said... We liked watching Port Adelaide. We thought they were a good side. But I thought the win yesterday, it sort of really franked them as a genuinely good, good side, top four side. It was tougher. It was grittier. I'm not saying it's a be-all, end-all, like, style points. But the fact is, they've had the style and the showtime footy. But that was a genuine, hardened, top four side win, I thought.
I just want to say something more on the Giants, Jimmy. They're annoying me a bit. they are, because... They've got the best midfield in the competition, and they are playing a risk-averse game of football. And you're big on this. They don't want to go through the corridor. They're not moving the ball quickly. They've got a hell of a lot of good midfielders in that team that aren't playing particularly well at the moment. And they are not playing as well as they should be. They've got Brisbane this week. That is a fantastic game that with those two teams going up against each other. They're not just a team. Like Leon Cameron said, we're in the mix, we're in the mix. They played in the grand final last year. They're not playing as well as they should be.
No, you're right. And it's very difficult to execute what you want as a coach as if you've got players down. Ask the super coach here on speaking in this group chat. Half of it, you can put all the game plans in place, but if there's players a bit down on form, it makes it pretty tough to execute.
How's he going, Leon? What's the feedback from within the camp?
He's going all right. How do you think he's going? As a coach, I wasn't being smart aleck there, Harper. You watch the game with a coach's hat more than us three.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're... I'm a bit with Whitey, I must admit. I don't think they're exploiting the talents they've got very well. at the moment, the way they play. Because they've got, as you well know, about being a director of the footy club, there is enormous talent. And the way they built their system and plan last year to get to the grand final was really positive. And I just thought that with the progression of that coming into this year, that they would be a much more aggressive team. And in terms of their movement, I'm just not seeing that, Jim. I'd love them to be a more direct team.
But they were a bit like that at times last year, half. And, you know, they got going a bit in the final series. But they're just with the talent that they've got, I just don't think they play as well as they should. And they don't take the game on as well. Maybe opposition set up that they can't play it that way. Or maybe they've got... Can you have too many good players where they just can't play the positions they want to... No, but in that they can't play the positions they want to play on the field, that they get... You know, lost on a wing or having to play half forward.
I spoke about this last week, Whitey, with Geelong, and Jimmy can talk about this further. Geelong, when before 2007, before it all started to roll for them, everybody thought they had too many players, too many good players. But what it was players accepting their roles.
Yeah, now,
I always go back to Corey Enright. You know, James Kelly plays on a wing. Joel Corey sacrificed his game. Jimmy sacrificed his game the way he naturally played. So maybe it's more that. Rather than going, okay, I want to be the superstar, I want to be the man, you've got to be the superstar if you win games and win premierships. You talk about all those Geelong players that change their roles. I still think of every one of those Geelong players as superstars.
Yep, how do I get that? We'll get to a break, boys. 9-8. We'll come back and talk about your boys, the Bombers. Rammer, very good on the weekend again. 4-1 with a game in hand, travelling beautifully. And the attack v defence conversation you want to get your teeth into as well with Jimmy Bartel, our Monday analyst on The Breakfast Club.
Telstra crew got a hold of it, so they gave me a brand new Samsung, so it's a better phone than I got. I think it's about $1,500, so I'm scared that people are going to keep talking smack every week to get a new phone. So, it's one of the nice guys, so he didn't mean any malice in it. It makes it pretty exciting. I love it. It's good, and you got respect for each other. He, like I said, one of the nice guys, so it's good to get the win, and he plays some good footy too.
Nice touch from Nick Nat, providing a new phone for the broken phone of Riley O'Brien after the notes, the pre-game notes. We're inadvertently put to Twitter instead of his notes in his phone. But he's got a brand new Samsung Flip worth about $1,500. It's a great result. And if I was a Fremantle player, I'd be talking smack to Nick Nat this week, hopefully, to get a new phone. And West Coast too good for Adelaide. And they're back home now. They're 3-3. They've done well to square it up, I reckon. At 3-3 after the way they started in the hub life. And they're going to be back home for the next 15 years of their life, I reckon.
Yeah, if you're wanting a bet long-term on the footy, we talked about this last week for the Premiership, West Coast. They're going okay. And they'll get better.
Rama, we might do your attack defence conversation with David Teague after 8 o'clock, I reckon. There might be a chance to flesh that out a bit and talk about the coaching of the fine arts of the game. But let's have a chat about the Kangaroos and the Bombers game. It was Metricon Stadium on Saturday night. The Bombers now are slipping into the top four, 4-1 with a game in hand. They are going beautifully.
Well, Jacob Townsend kicks a ball 30 centimetres further. They're undefeated.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
Jacob. True.
Yeah, Jacob. Why are you such a loser, worries. Jacob? I'll tell you what, he played a very interesting role on the weekend, the win over the Kangaroos. He was a real bustling sort of pack-crunching centre-half forward, Townsend, for the Bombers. They were good again, Rammer, your boys?
Yeah. And I think Townsend enjoys that role. He enjoys the contest. He enjoys, you know, taking a body out or going through a pack. That's the way he gets himself going. But the beauty of the way Essendon is going at the moment, it's McGrath, Parrish, Fantasia in sort of a new role at the moment, which he looks pretty comfortable with.
You know,
Hibbert was pretty good for him last night. Ridley. Snelling, I think, has been a really good find. He's only small, but he loves tackling. So it's more those lesser light players, or not lesser light, I'll say younger players that are now starting to progress into bona fide good players.
We talked about this with Essendon last week, Rammer. That is where the improvements come from, and it always was going to have to be. You know, I'd throw Langford into the mix as well. As someone that they've become reliable players now for Essendon, so it's not just on the top tier of Merritt, Scheel and whoever to get the footy. They've got a much more even contribution from a lot more players. So I think that's
Snelling's
been
a huge
job.
Ham.
Yep. They've got roles and they're playing their roles well.
And I think importantly, they were challenged on Saturday night, and they responded. They continue to respond because, Jimmy, they continued to play attacking football. They didn't go back to Kale Hooker marking in defence and then stopping and chipping sideways and you know, crisscrossing the ground that way. They're taking a mark and they're trying to move the ball forward, albeit it was very slippery by the end of that game on Saturday night.
Yeah, and they've got a point of difference, and that's what good sides have. And their point of difference, we highlighted, you know, Connor McKenna, unfortunately, yeah, he's hurt his finger, but McKenna, Saad, McGrath when he gets behind the ball, Fantasia in that new role, is they can break you open really quickly with speed and break those defensive lines. You know, the carry at 10, kick at 40 or 50 metres, that's what breaks down defensive zones. And that's a point of difference, and they're playing to it more, aren't they, Rama? So, as you mentioned, they're not just marking the footy with Hooker and Hurley and going sideways. They're trying to play to their point of difference, and I think they're starting to get the balance right of who fits where in the midfield forward mix. So, I think in previous years, they're trying to work out, well, who's our midfielder and then who's our forward. I think now they've gotten to that stage of guys can go through both. You think, you know, last year and even the year before, it's, well, we just have to leave Parrish as a forward. And we just have to try and make Langford as a forward or as a midfielder. They've got the mix where, all right, Darcy Parrish, you play the first 10 minutes of the quarter and then you drift forward. And then the next player comes up. I think they've just got those rotations going really well at the moment. So, and it's always the what if, isn't it, Whitey and Rammer, is, geez, imagine if Joe Danaher was there. Or imagine if, you know, Fantasia when he's fully fit in there. And imagine if Stringer is fully fit, what that look like with a full complement forward of the ball.
But this is the beauty, I think, Jimmy, for Essendon fans out there, is Joe Danaher's only probably a couple of weeks away, maybe three.
The Barmy. Is this the Barmy 2 weeks away, though?
Well, John Walsh was saying yesterday, Whitey, that it's at least four and possibly six.
Well, I mean about actually playing some football. So we saw Sam Draper play in a scratch match against the other North Melbourne players. He's coming back from a knee injury. They've got high hopes on him. He did extremely well from all reports. So they're there. They're just not playing at the moment. So if they can keep going okay until they do come back, well then, you know, I think it is reason to be a bit excited.
But that might be the issue for the Bombers, because you're going to have Danaher come back at some stage, who's had a massive layoff. You're going to have Heppel come back at some stage, who's had a massive layoff. You're going to have Stringer come back at some stage, who's had a massive layoff. So bringing those players back into the fold at the right time and with the right conditioning is going to be important for momentum for the Bombers.
I understand that, but I think what Jimmy's saying is that the players that Essendon are deficient in, they are actually on their list. It's not like their list is a very good list.
It's just a balanced list.
It's a very good balanced list. It's just that there are players that are currently injured that would fit the spots that they need to improve in.
My only concern with the Bombers, they've done what they've needed to do. But you look at their opposition in the first 5 weeks, and it's not exactly all star. Fremantle they beat, Sydney they beat, Carlton they lost to. Carlton are a middle of the road team at this stage, even though they're stuck into the top eight. They beat Collingwood, which is fantastic, and they're a serious footy team, so that's the win of the year for them. And they beat the Kangaroos by 14 points, who are paddling the Kangaroos. Do they need some support in the midfield for Josh Himken? Zeeble and Cunnington weren't there. Cunnington. I understand that. But after that, he needs some support. He's a good kid, Simkin.
Yeah, he's a good player. But half your point on Essendon is, I think, absolutely valid. And I think we do get a legitimacy test with Essendon this week against the Bulldogs, who will be starting after such a poor performance last week. But Essendon have got to do it without Scheel and Heppel in the midfield.
Yep, we will see. Good stuff. Good chat about the world of footy, Jim. Always great to do it on a Monday morning with you on The Breakfast Club. We appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
I enjoyed it as always, man.
You're a good man. Jimmy Bartel, Triple Premiership player, Brownlow medalist, Norm Smith medalist, and Monday specialist on The Breakfast Club. We'll get to the news at 8 o'clock. Coming up after that, David Teague is the coach of the Blues. They had a massive win over the Bulldogs last night. He'll tell us how and why on The Breakfast Club.